Let the words of my mouth and the meditations of our heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. I doubt there's anyone here or anyone listening to us by radio that is not in awe and aware of the fragile nature of life which we experienced over the last week and days. The precariousness that surrounds us, that we so easily and quickly forget, and how we could not be humbled by the power that was able to bring down mighty trees and wreak ravaged destruction across the tenuous balance of our power grid and our delivery of services and care and communication. But not also reminded of the hopefulness with which a community responded, came forward. I loved coming and seeing the sign here that we have heat and food. And I discovered after a few days what a luxury it is to have warm water to wash your hands. And the hopefulness, even in Haiti, where the Haitians are saying to the relief companies, you know, we've got it. There's things that we can do and will do. Their hope springs eternal in the human heart. But what do you suppose the hope Jesus was feeling in those final days when he was moving toward Jerusalem? The pain that he knew, the peril that he was experiencing, but beneath it the promise that he sought to deliver. And yet, the ministry that he'd had and the frustration he felt that so many of those who were closest to him didn't get what he was talking about. They couldn't understand it. And Peter was always quick to say, "Amen, Lord, I'm here, I'm with you." And Jesus would ask him to think again and had to rebuke him because impulsive Peter just didn't want to hear some of the things that he was challenging and confronting them. And the disciples had a hard time understanding, and they wondered and kept asking. And on the other hand, those who were confronted and knew there was something there but didn't quite know what to do with it, Nicodemus came and said, "Lord, how can I find life?" Or the rich young ruler saying, "Lord, how can I inherit eternal life? Where can I find meaning and happiness?" And Jesus would lay out a simple principle and they would turn away. They got it and couldn't get it. And then there were those who said he was a maniac. He was crazy. You couldn't follow or listen to him because he was going to upset the balance and threatening the civil and religious authority. Their place and power and prestige was to be challenged by the simplicity of this peasant coming and saying, "Live by love. Care for one another. Sacrifice yourself. Don't try to save it. You'll lose it." Can you but not feel what Jesus felt when he'd been trying to say this through his ministry and then going into Jerusalem when he looked over that city and looked down at it and wept? "Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how I long to embrace you like a mother hen does her chicken, but you would not." And how powerfully and painfully he learned that they would not. Seemingly, they could not. And so this lesson, I think, has something for us where he tried to say, you know, I'm the gate, or this is the way. And people who try to get in by some other means than learning love and compassion and justice are cheating and stealing and confusing the sheep. But I know, and the sheep can enter in. It isn't a narrow theological gate. It's a gate of understanding and compassion and of care. And he said, I know those who would come, and those who can hear what I'm saying will hear my voice and find comfort, and the others will disseminate and destroy and scatter the sheep. They know me. They know me. I'm the good shepherd because I'm willing to go the whole way. I'm willing to give up my own position or power or whatever I may have, to yield it so I may follow what is God's will, to say that we have to learn to come together in a way that we care for one another. It isn't a narrow theological definition of this. It's a opening up that we don't try to shelter ourselves when we can sacrifice ourselves in the service of others. Then the way opens and the door opens and people can hear and feel and understand. And then he said what I think is one of the most special passages so often forgotten and overlooked. When he talked to them about this, the tenderness and the sense of caring and belonging that they would feel by hearing his voice, he reminded them, I think, one of the most special things for us to hear. Other sheep I have that you know not of, and they too will be gathered, and we will be one. How dangerous it is for us to name who's in, who's out. The Christ principle works in places that we couldn't imagine and sometimes deny in bringing that message of compassion. Can you imagine for a moment that the Dalai Lama, in bringing the message that he has brought to the world, was not of that same persuasion and understanding of feeling the connectedness of all humanity? Jesus challenges us. Our Christology has to be opened up, that it can't be confined to the few and those we can describe, but open to those who hear a message of compassion and are willing to sacrifice for it. But they said he was crazy. He was crazy. So they had to dispose of him. But the amazing thing, it didn't work. Now I have a question. When we look at this principle, who do you know who would die for you? Who do you know who would give their all just to help you understand and feel loved? Who do you know who would be the prodigal father who, against the justice measurements of a society, welcomed a son who had been lost but realized he needed love? Who do you find? Who do you see? And you could name them. I don't know a parent. Oh, I know some that can't make it, but there are others that would die for their children, giving organs, giving wealth, giving meaning, giving life, and they would be there. As a pastor and as a psychoanalyst, one of the moorings for the life and soul is to search back and try to find somewhere in the past of the despairing and tormented soul one who really loved them, who was able to say unconditionally, and help them feel, not only hear, but to feel being loved. And once you're loved, you're unleashed from a bondage of fear. And then I'd ask you, who would you die for? Who'd you go all the way for? And you know, I can't give you the list. This is a sermon you're going to have to finish when you get home, because I couldn't begin to exhaust this, but the themes are too rich and too many and too varied. And you know, a sermon is preached by the congregation as well, because you catch it and get it and move with it, and then I hope, like leaven in the lump, it begins to permeate your thinking and consciousness as you go forward. Now, we ask people to die for their country. But who would die to, and I think there's an element of that sacrifice there, but who would die to really bring home the caring? And I'm sure there are many, and you know many, and understand many, but the question is, who exploits and who inspires us? And you could give a roll call of that as you go along. But you know, I hope they all went to their places of worship. But the Congress is meeting this afternoon to deliberate a health care bill. And I don't know where you are on it. And the thing I care mostly about is that every president since Theodore Roosevelt said, we're not taking care of our people. And almost every occupant of the Oval Office has said, we have to care for our people. And when we're trying, as I think some, to find, it's not perfect. It's never going to be perfect. It's always a process of trying to perfect a system, but there must, in the mercy and care of God, demonstrate the compassion that our people are not left outside the doors and they're not cursed to an early death because the society can't perform and reform and respond to human need. That's what Jesus came for. It isn't a theological description. It's a practical day-to-day decision where we can pour oil on the wounds, where we can bind up the brokenhearted. We can care and shelter those who have no place to go and be working with that. But then we see there's always somebody trying to exploit, to not come through the straight gate, but jump over the wall to get in. And you look at the political shambles of our society today when we proudly proclaim a democracy. But is this a democracy when we can stifle the service of a people? Is it a democracy when public power can buy positions and offices and leave moribund those who would lead? Where is the moral caliber of a people who can speak out and say, we care, we struggle? And it isn't just in the political arena. It's in the economic. The hirelings who have made off with fantasy and pride of the profits that they were ill-gotten in the manipulation of markets of trade. And it happens in society and religion. There are religious ones that say, this is it, and if you don't come our way, you're going to hell. And I know folks who say, well, if you aren't in our group, I'll never see my children in heaven. I don't think they see their children in life if there isn't this understanding to respond and care, and not to make them conform to some narrow doctrinal thing. It isn't doctrine. It's the service and the way we relate to one another. That's the important test of faith. I think we have to really look at and challenge the merchants who foster fear to scare and divide and exploit our people rather than to inspire care, inspire participating, and understanding that we're not going to arrive at a place where we can inspire care when we don't want to count the cost and pay the price of delivering the oil to the wounds of our society and of our time. Where we can respond to it with compassion, where we can hold up and embrace. But then, who are the people who've delivered it to you? As again, this is more of your homework. Think about the people there are who have been shepherds to your souls and your lives. I think one of the best examples that we have, coming right out of the American lack of consciousness and consciousness, is Martin Luther King Jr. If he wasn't a shepherd, I don't know who was, or who is, or who could be. Because he sensed, called to it, the pain of a people, but not just the African-American or black community, but the white community that had sold its soul to perpetuate segregation. But he didn't go at it to try to beat them down and to destroy. He said, we're going to kill you with kindness. We're going to love you. His book on the power of love, to love, is a classic. And it shows the good shepherd who's willing to lay down his life for sheep. And when he was in Memphis, said, I'm standing here on the mountain. I may not see the promised land with you. I may not get into that place where we're coming, but we're heading there. And I'm willing to lay down my life that people may find life and learn to love and relate to one another. That was Gandhi's message. And our folks coming back from Central America, Oscar Romero, who was just, 30 years ago this month that he was trying to pray for his people who are being tortured by the oppressive political and military regimes and standing at the altar, lifting them up in prayer, and was shot down at the altar because he was a voice of conscience. He was a voice of care. He was trying to build the sheepfold in a way that people could understand it. You know, we have the 23rd Psalm, which is so reassuring, and it is God's love, and it is present, and the 100th Psalm to praise it. But Jesus also said to us, and to the disciples, and it's to us, tend my sheep, feed my sheep. Remember that? Remember that passage? Hello? Because, I mean, that's where the rubber hits the road. You know, can you tend my sheep and love them? So we're called upon, you see, not to just seek the cozy protection of green pastures and still waters, but that we're called upon as, you know, we've sanitized the Apostles' Creed and taken the guts out of it by limiting that phrase, he descended into hell. I think we need to bring that in. Because when Jesus came into the world and the struggle of it, he went to hell. The hell of a society that was so divided. The hell of a society that was so hateful. The hell of a society that would have to kill him because they didn't want to hear that you're a community and you care for one another. It was Martin Luther who said, you know, you have to be the Christ to your brothers and your sisters. Being a Christ to them, we're called upon. A great moment of conscience and awareness for me was in Africa, in Ghana, and going to the Cape Coast Fort. Some of you may have been there, where the slaves were brought in and held in dungeons and then shipped out. And I will forever be haunted by the chapel above the pit of hell where the powerful prayed and the poor had the cries from hell of their oppression and conditions in the dungeon below. And I thought, how could they do it? And then the Lord spoke to me when I got out of there and said, Willow, what are you missing? What are you praying over so you don't hear the cries of a people, the cries of life around us wherever we are? Can we descend into the destructive divisiveness and division of our society and not fearing that it will untidy us, but we go in surrendering and serving and being present? A little over a week, our Jewish friends, our family, will be starting Passover as we're in Holy Week. And I hope some of you who have Jewish relatives and friends will have the privilege of being invited to a Passover and to recite the story of a people who were in bondage and long for freedom. God sent one to deliver them, a reluctant one, but still a shepherd, and led them out. But the amazing thing to me was they wanted their freedom, but they wanted it with all the comfort that could possibly be provided, and were fearful of where they were going to get food and where they were going to find shelter and whether or not they were going to survive. And it got down to the point it was so desperate that Moses was having to arbitrate between God and with the people. God was despairing and the people were grumbling, and poor Moses was caught in the dilemma of his uncertainty trying to lead them on and say, have faith, God will provide. And Rachel Naomi Remen, in her wonderful book on grandfather's blessing, has a passage about the Passover where she didn't understand it, and her grandfather, the old rabbi, explained that to move from slavery to freedom is to move from bondage to uncertainty. You can't chart the course. You have to trust the leader. And so we go into uncertain times. In our society and our world today, with the issues of economics and ecology and care, we are going into uncharted territories. And if we think we can guarantee it, or make it simple, or make it painless, we don't understand the cross. Because when you can take up a cross and see we are not afraid of the waters and the wilderness and the demons of the dark, we can move into this. Because as the wonderful story of Moses was that God said he didn't send one of his angels in. God said, I'm going to lead you. I'm going to lead you. I'm the shepherd of the sheep. And I will guide you into that place. But it's a lonesome valley. And it's not an easy path. So to think we can go where we dream without a commitment and finding the excitement that comes in yielding up our own selfishness to the excitement of discovering the other and living and growing and rejoicing with them. Can you get it? Do you dare know the shepherd and be a sheep and then become a shepherd? That's our calling. And we go into Holy Week knowing it's no simple path through the valley of the shadow of darkness. But the only place to the abundant table was where all God's children come together and are fed and anointed and loved. And we have the opportunity to be a part of it, not apart from it, but with it, because he is with us. We are not alone. We are the sheep of his pastures and the love of his creation. Amen.